This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Oh, rough week, huh? Coming off the heels of that one, game last week, of course, still rings hollow. Still hollow throughout the week. But get this in here and see where your guys' mindset is. I mean, reading social media and Twitter and message boards and stuff, you can, it's not hard to figure out, but get you guys in here. What you want to see this week versus Vanderbilt? Any big picture questions or outlook? Get those in there as well. No, hard, very hard to get up for this game, but one thing I can fall back on, just remember that these are the 12, 13, 14 weeks we all look so much forward to. So could be worse. Could be worse. But, go take advantage of a Saturday in Gainesville. Noon kicker, I know, kind of stinks. But only so many opportunities that we get to watch this team watch football. So hopefully a lot of cheering versus Vanderbilt tomorrow, of course. I know it's hard to get up for this one coming off of last week. This is hopefully the get-right game. I hate to say it. The focus doesn't have to be there 100%, or it shouldn't have to be there 100%. But this is Emory Jones said it right this week. Dan Mullen, he said Dan Mullen goes, turn the frustration into motivation. That's exactly what this week is. Go let out the frustration versus Vanderbilt this week. That's what you want to see. Even if the mental side of it is not all the way there, you should honestly right now. I mean, look, to me, this is how I'd approach it anyway, and I know sometimes it's just hard. But right now, at least right now, but it should always be this week in and week out, you want to go be better than the man in front of you. And right now, this is a chance to let that frustration out. Go take it out on Vanderbilt. We hear all the time of fall camp and fall preseason camp. We're tired of hitting each other. We want to go hit the other team. Doesn't matter who it is. Well, okay. Well, then you have another chance to show that and go let some frustration out of last week out. So there's something you can take away from it. Look, the only thing you're going to take out of this is, if it's good, it was okay. Well, that's what was supposed to happen. At least the team is focused enough to go out there and take care of business versus Vanderbilt. You're going to take a whole lot more out of it if it's bad, so hopefully that doesn't happen, of course. Vanderbilt is a pretty terrible team. You can play down and still beat this team by 30 if at least you're focused enough. I guess that's where I'll put it, if you're focused enough. But should be able to go out there and take care of business. We'll see how Florida goes into the roster there versus Vanderbilt, but that'd be a lot of it here. But let's get first guest in here, Zach Powers. Remember, guys, are being recorded for this. I'll post it later. But Zach, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? I have two things I'd love to hear you comment on. One, I want to say.
I'm losing you, Zach. Don't hear you. I may have to reconnect or something. Last thing I heard you say was you had two things. There you are.
All right. You can hear me?
Yep, I got you.
Okay, got you. So the first thing is I understand, you know, we lost, you know, playoffs hopes are kind of trashed, but I still feel like on especially Gators Twitter, there's just so much, you know, the season's over, there's no point in watching the games. I may be in a minority here, but I'm still super interested to see, like, I obviously want to beat the hell out of Georgia mm-hmm. and everybody else we play, and I feel like that's I don't know, it seems like a minority here on Twitter, but it definitely rings true for me that I'm still incredibly involved in the season.
Yeah, I mean, that goes to my point earlier, like, you know, this is the time of year we wait for, so you don't want to throw it away in early October. I mean, a lot of us are still going to, no matter how you feel, a lot of people are still going to watch the games and see how they turn out. But as you said, you know, don't go into Georgia week or LSU Georgia week, woe is me. You know, still, you don't know what happened, so go out there. Like I said, you know, the week of Bama, you know, a lot of people were expecting, you know, to go get bashed by Bama, and that didn't happen. You know, go have fun with it during the week. You don't know what happened. You don't want to look back and say, oh, I wish I would have, you know, wrapped myself up a little bit more, or, you know, help wrap the team up a little bit more. You know, so look, go be a fan. That's as you're saying, that can still happen. Go be a fan. But a lot of it, as far as, you know, looking big picture, it's whatever your expectation was coming into the season. Now, most people expected a down year from Florida, but that can be fluid. You know, everybody's willing. Everybody has the ability to change their mind. Everybody should say, well, you said this and it didn't happen. You know, no, everybody can change their mind. You can go along with the flow. You had the 2-point loss versus Bama. Everything was looking good. And no matter what you thought about Florida, whether it was 11, you know, undefeated, 11-1, 10-2, 9-3, or, you know, who you had Florida losing to, you know, but part of it goes into, you can change your mind. You know, Florida played Alabama very well. If you wanted to heighten your expectations after that, by all means, go do it, because, you know, that's what you should have been actually doing. But then, you know, you go, and a couple weeks later, you get the performance versus Kentucky. And look, a lot of people, it's not that you lost to Kentucky for some people. A lot of people pick that game. A lot of people pick that, well, Florida's going to lose that game, they probably shouldn't lose. But a lot of it also goes to, how did it happen? And I don't think anybody was picking it to look like it did in that fashion, you know, to look like you weren't prepared, look like you weren't ready to play, and the false starts and the preparation, and, you know, basically outplaying Kentucky in a lot of ways and still coming out on the losing side of that game. So a lot of it is just how things look, how things happen, but you're still a Gator. You're still a fan, you know, and you'll get right tomorrow versus Vanderbilt, and, you know, go into LSU week like it was just the same game the same game it usually is.
Absolutely. And I also have the second thing I have is I've been watching Gator football for a while now, and it seems like to me that ever since the championships, whenever we have this tremendous amount of hype coming in, you know, we're ranked top 5, top 10, it always seems to me that we kind of you know, we play games, we stay, you know, ranked up high like we were just ranked in the preseason, and then we just miraculously lose a game we shouldn't lose. And I was wondering if you've seen any similarities to previous years that you're kind of seeing now.
Last year was weird with you had the A&M loss. And look, that was a game, and honestly, a lot of ways, like the Kentucky game, in some ways that, you know, you felt like you outplayed the opponent, but still came out a losing end of the game. There's one similarity. But look, also kind of comparing it to the LSU game of you just did not look prepared, and it came back to bite you. You stayed in the game. You clawed your way and stayed it to the very end, but you just didn't come out with it. I guess as far as Mullen goes, you kind of maybe go back to 2018 as well, and Missouri game, and that's where a lot of people point to the fire of the team and the fire of the head coach is still there. Hard to compare it to previous years right now. I want to see how Florida bounces back and how they play in the bigger games that's on the schedule. You know, now, you could say, do they pack it in? And I guess you could kind of point to, well, you played Alabama tough. Maybe you should go out there and be able to play Georgia tough as well. I mean, Georgia's a good football team, and they have the capability. And if Florida can prepare right, Florida can look good going into the game, and Georgia is that type of team right now that could still make it look ugly. So I don't want to sit here and say that if it looks very ugly versus Georgia in a couple weeks, too, that, you know, just – this team is just giving up on the fire and the passion of the season. Georgia just may be that good. But I do think you expect to see Florida come out and at least it's a bigger game. Maybe there's a comparison right there. We've seen Florida come out and play Georgia tough, even when we didn't think they were the better team in 2018 and 2019. You could tell they were fighting in that game. The last couple games against Bama, yeah, you're outmatched, but you go out there and you show the passion and the will to stay in those games and keep them close. So maybe the comparison will be, all right, well, you know Florida can play these better teams tough. And now you have to go out there and show it. You know, you played Georgia tough. You played Alabama tough. You got another opportunity to go do it in a couple weeks in Jacksonville. So go get right versus Vanderbilt. Go get right versus LSU. And go put something together versus Georgia to where maybe it's not even questioned if how this team is approaching the rest of the season. Thanks, Zach. John?
Morning.
Hey, man.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. So, taking in, it's been almost a week now. I'm still pretty pissed off about this loss. But my question to you is, even if we went out and we beat Georgia pretty handily, Kentucky loses to Georgia, is there still a chance that we could still sneak in to the SEC championship?
Two scenarios there. Florida, of course, is going to have to win out. So that means you're going to have to beat Georgia. Georgia is going to have to lose somewhere else along the way to give them two losses. And then Kentucky will have to have two losses as well, and maybe your three-way tie. And I think that goes to the highest-ranked team in the college football playoff. I think that's the tiebreaker. I could be wrong on that. Or there's some kind of tiebreaker where all teams would be with two losses. So there's one route. You have a three-way tie with two losses. Because, you know, Florida would beat Georgia. Georgia would probably have to beat Kentucky in that regard, and then Kentucky had already beaten Florida. So there's a – if I'm thinking about it right, your three-way tie with two losses per team. Or two losses for Georgia. You have to have the head-to-head against them, and Kentucky has to lose three games because they don't have the head-to-head on you, and you have two conference losses. So they'll have to have one more loss because they own the head-to-head victory over you. So that's the two scenarios there. Whichever, I don't know which one more people see likely, if at all. Georgia, Kentucky, you know, there you go. One of those are going to lose to each other. But you're more than likely you'll need Georgia to beat Kentucky in that regard. Kentucky has LSU this week. We'll see. That's like I said in the preview, the Vanderbilt preview this week. You probably need it to happen this week. You need Georgia's first loss to come versus Auburn, and then you beat Georgia in a couple weeks. And you need Kentucky to lose to LSU to right now put some pressure on those teams. Kentucky beats LSU, there's not many more chances for them to get three losses and three conference losses in this season. So I think to make you feel better about any chance Florida has, it's going to have to happen this weekend.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going over. Like, is there still a scenario where we win out and all the cards fall right where we even make a chance at the SEC? Because if we beat Georgia and things go our way, that'll propel us back into the top five, top 10, possibly.
Yeah,
so this is a, if we win out,
this
like
is a crazy season.
Like, that's what kind of the one thing I was looking at. Like, is there still a chance that we can make the SEC championship, get our rematch with Bama, and then even with the two losses, still have a chance for a four, even if it's a fourth seed?
I would think so. You know, of course, a lot of things have to happen. This is a crazy football season so far already, but just for giggles, if Florida ends the season with two losses, they're in the playoff. I say, if you're an SEC champion with two losses right now, I still think you scoot into the playoffs. So a lot has to happen. You have to have some teams help you out. This is a crazy football season already. But I do think that is the possibility. So there's, like I said, there is plenty for this team to play for, no matter how unlikely that scenario plays out right now. You don't know. So you got to take your chances and go win out. Look, you want to win out anyway. I mean, no matter if it – even if you fall short of
– I mean
– if you fall – if you end up 10-2, you'll be lost in hindsight, just because more than likely it kept you from bigger things, of course. But, you know, there's still some, you know, go beat LSU, go beat
Georgia. Still, yeah, there's still plenty of reason, because even if we don't have things fall our way, we can still play spoiler yeah. and ruin everybody else's chances. So, I mean, there's still plenty to play for. But like I was saying, like I'm trying to look at it, and I'm a stats person. So like I'm trying to find every way to. Possibly,
unlikely as it is, there's still that sliver of a possibility out there.
Yeah. So basically, what do you see for the rest of the season? I mean, at this point, you lost to Kentucky. Your playoff chances are practically 0.1%. So, I mean, is Mullen going to stick with Emory Jones the rest of the season? I mean, or is he going to just say, try and do like he did in our off year with Tebow and his backup, like try and split it, see what we got for next year, and, you know, try to see what we can really expect out of Anthony Richardson.
I do expect Anthony's role to increase. Like, I think it should increase anyway. No matter you beat Kentucky last week, I still think we need to see more. I don't know how to read Mullen on this one. Asking around, there really is a belief that, you know, Anthony doesn't know the playbook, so he's going to be limited in that regard, and Mullen's not going to throw him out there. And with Mullen's history, and he's been lauded for it at times too, is not putting quarterbacks out there before they're ready and getting their confidence down. But to me, the offense is limited in some ways with Emory Jones as well. Even him knowing the playbook, even him knowing the plays, there's a physical on-the-field limitation to how he's playing as far as downfield passing, making reads on time and all that. So, you know, so right now there's limitations either way you look, whether it be physical limitations and now Anthony turning around for him, you know, playbook being limited, limitations for him. So I think you play both. I think you play both a lot. I think you get some kind of rotation in there. Maybe that messes him up. I don't know. I still think at some point in the season will we see Anthony make a start. If you hold my face to the coals and make me answer, I'll say yes with a slight favoritism towards yes, but that's just be pure guessing. I really don't know. I'd like to see it, or at least in a very, very extended look at Anthony Richardson to see how he reacts. You know, giving 3-4 drives in a row. Maybe we see that tomorrow versus Vanderbilt, and I don't think that's any inclination of how the rest of the season will play out, because it's Vanderbilt. You should get up point. You should put up some points. You should be able to get some backups in. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a, all right, look, he's getting the whole second. According to what the score is, you know, Florida's up by 3-4 touchdowns in the second half, and then Anthony Richardson comes in. I don't think that's necessarily an inclination that, all right, Dan Mullen, trust him a little bit more. I think it's all right. Well, I'm going to get my starter out and get my backup some reps. I don't think that necessarily means that I'm going to get Anthony Richardson some reps in important times in the game. That's what we want to see. And we won't get that answer until LSU in a couple of weeks. Of course, like I said, the score to have the Vanderbilt game plays out. But if it plays out like we think it will, and Richardson's getting a whole lot of snaps in the second half, that might just be because, all right, I'm getting my starter out. So we won't really get our full Anthony Richardson answer, I don't believe, until LSU in a couple weeks.
Yeah. You know, I still believe, like, if Mullen would have put him in versus Alabama here a little bit, like, he should have played him just a little bit, even if it was like last week, just a little here and there. I think it would have made a difference if he would have played him a little bit more in certain areas and not dick around in the first half. He should have called the timeouts. He should have went down the field. And I've seen something somewhere that's saying that he got pretty much ass hurt, that something didn't go his way, so therefore he's going to let the clock run out. It's like, no, you put your foot on their throats. You don't take it off. That's like the number one rule in football. Almost all coaches. And that's the difference. You don't see Nick Saban doing that. He's going to keep beating the shit out of you and send all his players out. That's why Alabama is so dominant. They don't take their foot off the brake, off of their throats. And something needs to change in Gainesville because that mentality needs to get somebody needs to do it. I don't know if it's what's Mullen's problem with it, like why he want to be way too conservative, like, you know, is Grantham's got his issues. He should have been fired last year, but when you come to think about it, if we had last year's offense and this year's defense, there's no way we wouldn't have went undefeated. And I think it's really more of an offensive thing this year. Now, I know we lost a lot of players to the draft and stuff, but I don't know. We've seen worse.
I get it, man. It's frustrating. Yeah, a lot of that stuff we spoke on all week long. So hopefully something changes in that regard of, you know, how to attack games and the mindset there. All right, John. Thanks, man. All right, Crunchtown. What you got, man?
Good morning, Dave. How's everybody doing this morning?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay, here's a question for all the Gator fans, because I love listening in on these calls. If I could give you a scenario where you basically go to Baton Rouge and end Ed Orgeron's coaching career at LSU, you upset Georgia. Now, you don't go to the SEC championship game, but you upset Georgia, basically forcing them to have to beat Alabama to get into the college football playoffs. You go destroy Florida State, which I know that's still a big thing for Gator fans. And you see Anthony Richardson start basically the last four games, and I'm talking South Carolina, Samford, Missouri, Florida State, and just tell him, look, you got the ball, you're not coming out the game. No, unless you're injured, you're the quarterback the last four games. How do Florida fans feel about that scenario?
Crunch, I got to bring something to the deal, okay, but how do you beat Georgia? If Emory's the quarterback and you beat Georgia, then you're probably not shifting quarterbacks.
You still make the move. You still make the move. Because yeah.
There's no way Mullen does it, though. I agree with you. If you go beat Georgia and Emory Jones is the starting quarterback, then there's no way Mullen's going to switch starting quarterbacks.
Okay, so let's refocus it. Emory starts, gets pulled, okay. AR finishes that game, kind of like what we saw with Bo Nix in that crazy win over LSU last couple of weeks ago.
And that scenario.
Starts the last four games.
Oh, yeah. Look, and I said before the season started, you want to, you know, I want to feel good about next year. No matter how it plays out, you know, you could be in Atlanta, you could not be in Atlanta. You know, I want to feel good, really good about going into next year. With this team, and I think if the season plays out like that, then absolutely, I think Gator fans will sign up for that right now. If you gave them a choice, all right, just take it however it may play out, or sign on the dotted line right here. You beat Georgia, Anthony Richardson comes in, saves the day, starts the last four games of the season. Yeah, I think a lot of people would take that right now. And moving forward, that would, I think, make the fan base feel a little better if you could give them that scenario and they take it and run with it. A lot of the fan base just wants to. Some of the fan base just wants to see Anthony Richardson just to see what they have,
and that's why I gave that scenario.
Yeah, and more of it. If he's not ready, then okay. Well, at least we know. But you know, now if he does come out and he's ready and he's lighting the world on fire like we have seen at times this year, then it's going to be like, all right, why'd you wait so long? I hope that's not playing into the decision of not playing. If so, another question that needs to be raised. And look, I understand Emory's been in the program. You don't want to give up on him after five games. I understand that way of it as well. But your job is to win games. And if you go out there and Anthony Richardson starts playing a lot more and the offense takes off and it looks like it's hard to stop, then the question is going to be out there. Then, okay, then why'd you wait so long? And so I hope that's not playing into the decision making here. I don't think it is, or at least if it is, Mullen's
just hoping
wrong.
It's not.
Yeah, right. It's just that he's wrong. He's not reading it right. If that's the case, and you know, he could be truthful in thinking Anthony's not ready, and you can't blame him for that. But if it goes out there and happens, it's like, well, all right, it was just you were just wrong, and Anthony should have been playing. But you know, we'll see how it plays out. And I do expect Richardson to get some more playing time, and we'll see where it goes from there. And maybe, you know, we get our answer if he's ready or not, and if he's ready to take this team. But a lot of it is, like you said, too, in getting ready for next year to make sure he's ready for next year. If you think he's the guy. So you put him out there, and maybe it's not the FAU and USF performance. There's more film on him out there now. He did some good things last week versus Kentucky. I think we wanted to see a little bit more. But, yeah, you go out there. And even if he's not starting, you have to play him a whole lot more. You have to let him go out there and put some drives together. Get into the flow of the game. Let him have the opportunity to get to the flow of the game.
Exactly. And the reason I gave that scenario, because this is the exact same scenario I gave Alabama fans a couple of years ago when they were getting ready to play Auburn. And I said, losing the Iron Bowl means nothing if you get Mac Jones ready for the next season.
Yeah.
Dan needs to find out, okay, going into spring practice, when you really start building for next season, you need to have this quarterback situation settled. You need to have a clear who's my number one and who's my number two. And if that means one guy transfers, so be it. But you can't have this, we're going to play Emory 2 series, then we're going to play AR 1 series. You need to settle this for the locker room. Not so much playing to the fan base, but just saying, okay, against some better competition, albeit South Carolina and Missouri aren't the greatest competition, but at least they're SEC caliber teams.
Yeah.
And you can say, okay, guys, now we have film on both of our quarterbacks, and we can make a better decision.
Yeah. Unlikely is the scenario Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson are both on the roster next year.
So, I don't see it. Yeah, I don't see it.
So, you're right. So, and look, you got two quarterbacks right now in Del Rio and Kitna. You'll be having Evers on the roster too. So, if you know, if Emory transfers, you still not experienced depth, but you'll have some depth back there. So it's like you'd be short of quarterbacks.
Right.
And look, that might even be too many quarterbacks, honestly. So, you know, Mullen's got to look ahead and say, okay, I don't need five quarterbacks on the roster.
Kind of what we're seeing at Ohio State, where you got all of these quarterbacks and you're going to lose at least two of them. So I'm looking forward to seeing this game. I'll actually be able to possibly even see the game here with Florida. So I can kind of get some firsthand eyes on this Florida roster. But Gator fans, if you can get the win against LSU, and who knows, this Georgia defense is great, but that Georgia offense is still beatable. That defense that you have there in Florida is good enough to shut down this Georgia offense. So don't write off the season just yet.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Down there. Bringing MJ in here.
What's up, Dave?
Hey, man. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Looking forward to this game this weekend. Might come by that tailgate, so see what you're up to. So, I mean, granted, everyone's in shambles or trying to get motivated for the rest of the season. Just kind of looking, taking a step back, 1,000-foot view. Last couple coaches we've had, I don't see how people can be so quick to lose their, I guess, focus on that. Because it's just, I feel Mac recruited heavily offense, Boom was heavily defense, and there were these just errant gaps in between positions and depth. Mullen comes in, makes something out of nothing, and then I think he rose too quickly. I think that was kind of like a handicap for him, not to say that's a bad thing. But, you know, he was Mississippi State. Mississippi State got plucked of coaches. You know, we did it with Jeff Collins and so on. And I think this is Mullen's first time experiencing having to deal with the kind of pressure with attrition and looking at his staff. So in his head coaching career, I almost kind of feel like he's learning for the first time what it might take to make those decisions. And that's probably why maybe he's taking so long. I mean, could that be an indicator?
That's a good point. The only thing I'll go back on that, because this is maybe a separate thought kind of in a way, but connected. You know, you said he rose too fast at Florida. Maybe the success came too fast. But there was also a chance to build on that with Miami and FSU being down. And, you know, and I'm talking mostly in the world of recruiting. You know, you should be able to take more advantage. So maybe this didn't happen. So there's a connection there. But this is the way it played out. And like you're saying, going to this point, then, yeah, I mean, this is – Florida and Mississippi State are different. Now, could there have been similar scenarios? Absolutely. But outside – and the pressure outside from the fan base. Look, yeah, he's not dealt with this. Even if he dealt with it at Mississippi State, the pressure's different. The level is different. So we know the expectations here at Florida. So I think what you're bringing up is a valid event that's happening right here and how he reacts to it. And this may be the first chance. Now, don't get me wrong. I know you can go ask some Mississippi State fans, and you can even go find articles out there about Mississippi State. And, all right, it's time to move on from John Hennessy. All right, it's time to move on from this assistant. So a lot of things Florida fans have said has been repeated by Mississippi State earlier in earlier years as well. But, you know, he could get by with it there. And there would be questions, but wouldn't necessarily – hear it as much or hear it as loud. And Mullins, he's getting it from everywhere. He's getting it in press conferences. He's getting on Paul Feinbaum's show. You know, what is he doing? Does he care anymore? You know, I know Josh Pate for his show on 24/7. He brought up a good point in talking about Dan Mullen this week and how he thinks. You know, look, Dan Mullen had one foot out the door last year. He wanted an NFL job, didn't get it. So now he's kind of got to check himself back in to be the head coach at Florida this year because maybe he was expecting to get that NFL offer last year. So not necessarily saying the focus isn't there, but, you know, maybe kind of having to come back into it. And so those questions are there right now. You know, those questions weren't really – the only question on a similar level that Dan Mullen had at Mississippi State was, all right, is he going to Michigan? Is he going to Miami? Maybe one foot out the door looking for the bigger job. But he was still able to coach his team, still able to have some success at the same time. So going to your point, though, a lot of maybe he's a little slow because this is the first time he's dealt with this pressure, first time he's and definitely at Florida dealt with it because you had those success. You had that success in the first couple years. People were kind of overlooking the coaching deficiencies a little bit. But now in the last end of 2020, the beginning of 2021, all that stuff's ramping back up while you still have a season to play.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying my best to keep grounded. It's been tough because I got to try to look at, like, all these things and these pie in the sky names potential. It's just hard to wrap my brain around having, like, a Lane Kiffin come in or I guess who was another name that got mentioned to kind of replace Mullen, forget who, but
– or even Cristobal.
Yeah, Cristobal, yeah. Hugh Freeze. I mean, but it's just – I don't know. Like, I have less trust in them to stay at Florida than I do Dan Mullen. I remember when he came out his first game, like, the dude just lit up. Like, to me, he, like, wanted to be here. So I was always going to give him 5 years. So I'm hoping, you know, next year, like, tells the whole story and we make those changes necessarily. But I don't know. I just – I say people are being unreasonable, but looking at what we've done in the past, it's almost hard to hang the man after a bad loss to Kentucky. I know he's done it twice. People screw up in their coaching career, and it's hard to shift gears and stuff. But I don't know. I'm not being fair weather. I'm not going to look at this as like an end all. I just look, he screwed up. Hopefully he knows that, and then he moves on and builds on it. So if he runs Vanderbilt to the ground and closes strong, I think that should be a convincing argument to tell people, like, look, he recognized what he did against Kentucky was not perfect, and that's it. Like, we go into the offseason with momentum and get geared up for 2022.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of people report to 2022 anyway, so that's kind of where I was at with 2021. You go take your chances. Go fight for Atlanta. If you end up in Atlanta, by all means, go for it. But, you know, I wanted to end 2021 feeling good about next year, and there's still that possibility there.
Oh, yeah. And plus, college football is weird. Who knows what's ends up happening when we get back to Atlanta.
This year's been weird already. So, go take care of your business, and whatever happens, happens.
Agreed. All right. Thanks for the opportunity, Dave. I'll see you this weekend.
All right, man. Sounds good. Swag, I think you're in here.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, man.
thanks for all you're doing for Gator Nation and, you know, in these troubling times. lots been made of Mullins, you know, being conservative, you know, especially with the program and things around, you know, Grantham and Trask and those types of things. But it seems like when just thinking and just looking at play calling, that he hasn't really been conservative. He tends to go forward on fourth down a lot. He tends to press the ball before halves. But he didn't do that, obviously, against Kentucky. And so two questions. One, I think it points to a lack of trust, right, in Emory. Uh-huh. But do you agree with that, number one? Number two, maybe he saw something in the scheme with Kentucky and just the game plan, and that's really what resulted in the conservative nature. But the real question is if we move to AR and there's a lack of trust in Emory and you put somebody in there that's even got less experience, does he even become more conservative from a play calling perspective? Again, I think if you look back at, am I misguided in thinking, not from a program perspective, but from a play calling perspective, am I misguided in thinking that he's really not conservative from a play calling perspective, even though he was against Kentucky? And, you know, do you think he becomes more conservative if AR gets in there? Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, well, and I said it this week. I do think it's a thin line in saying Dan Mullen's conservative and looking at what Florida's been successful with this year. I mean, you've been able to run the ball. So if you want to run the ball, that's going to come across as conservative. But you've had a lot of success there. So there's a thin line there in saying, I'm going to rely on my offensive line. I'm going to rely on this running game because that's what brought me to the dance right now. So that it's going to look conservative at times, but that's what you've had success with. So there's part of it, I think. Now, as far as quarterback play goes and trust there, I do think in the Kentucky game, I think it was a combo. I'm not going to throw it all on Emory. Do I think there's somewhat of a lack of trust there? I do. But there are play calls there that just need to be hit. There are plays down the field. All right, I'm calling this play. If you can get off your first read or if you can get off the throw you feel comfortable with, there is a guy open. But you're going to have to release it. You're going to have to release it on time. You're going to have to make the right read. That's still Emory Jones' next step of progression. Do we get there? I don't know. But also, I think in the Kentucky game, just lining it up, I do think it was a combo right at the end of the first half. I think it was a combo of limited trust in Emory, but also limited trust in that offensive line. I mean, he knew they weren't communicating very well. You were deep in your own territory. You don't want to give up a sack. You don't want your quarterback to get hit. Fumble, Kentucky's in great field position right before halftime. I get that. Would I have been aggressive? Yes. Dan Mullen has shown that aggression before. I do get why he didn't. I just disagree with it. So I think that's, for me, the best way to put it. As a head coach, as him looking at everything, I don't necessarily want my quarterback to turn it over right here. I don't trust the offensive line. They can't communicate. If they miss this communication, Emory Jones gets hit in the back. There's a fumble. Kentucky gets an easy score. You're in trouble going into halftime. So, but also at the same time, I'm like, well, you know, you can sit here and say you trust your defense because your defense has been playing pretty good. And go be a little more aggressive. And, you know, a lot of the fan base now in hindsight, I know it's different, would have said, okay, I would have taken being aggressive there. If Emory does the interception, he just does the interception. Well, okay, you say that now. You're fine with that now because you know how the game played out. But live and in action, you'd have been like, oh, God, why did he do that? You know, we knew Emory would go throw the interception there. So you look at it both ways, and you can't win either way. I get that perspective. But you're right. It goes against a lot of what we've seen from Mullen beforehand, whether it be the first drive of the game, you got fourth and two, you set a four punt instead of going for it, or right before halftime, or the last couple drives of the game where you're in scoring position. I mean, the easy thing would have been, all right, we have, after the face mask, you're in great field position. In hindsight, I could say, all right, go throw Anthony Richardson there, run the ball four straight times. See what happens. See if you get in the end zone. You know, we know the ability that he's shown there. Maybe, but a lot of that hindsight. But also in hindsight, we can say, well, Dan Mullen, you've been aggressive in these situations, and you weren't here. So I hate to take the easy way out. You see both sides of it. You see both sides of it from a coach's perspective. But it's hard because, all right, Mullen, you've shown it before, but also You see the flow of the game. There are some questions of where this offense was right before halftime, where the offensive line was before halftime, and you can see why he was aggressive, but I still think you can disagree with it.
And do you think if AR gets in there that he's going to need to rely even more on the run and even be more conservative, despite armchair coaches think?
I mean, I do, because of what he could also bring into the run game and the explosive runs. I've talked about the home run. Well, he can bring that, so you might rely. And look, go back to the Tebow days, and he relied a lot on the quarterback run. A lot of people said that was too conservative at times with Dan Mullen as the offensive coordinator, but it worked. But if you go to 2008, and a lot of people go back to the Ole Miss game that you lost and maybe too conservative there. Well, Florida turned the ball over like crazy versus Ole Miss. You don't turn the ball over. You win that game. Speaking of a game you should win, but you lose. But, I remember I don't know if it came out from Mullen or not. Maybe I know it was around with Adazio, but you had the joke of spinning a wheel and, the quarterback dive would come up a whole lot, and that's what you ran over and over again. So, but that was there, and it worked, and maybe sometimes was labeled as conservative. So you're right. If you do bring in AR, does it look conservative? Because you have a quarterback that can run. You have a quarterback that can run quarterback power and get you a couple, a few yards when you need it. But we have seen when he is in this year, the downfield passing game seems to be there, because that's in a way Richardson's comfortable in throwing the ball down the field and letting it loose. And if you're not fully caught up with the playbook, as Richardson is, then a lot of times you go out there and play a little more free. You let your athleticism take over. And I got a strong arm. I'm going to chuck it down the field. And, look, now he also made that heck of a when he's scrambling and made that throw to Copeland down the field. That's more about playmaking ability more so than reading the play and making a timing throw. And all. That's just a good athlete making a play, pressure in his face. That's what he brings to the table. But, I can see where Mullen would say, all right, I don't need that a whole lot. And it is a little more conservative as far as controlling the game with Richardson's legs more so than his arm. And that can be considered conservative.
Thanks, Dave. Go Gators.
Go Gators, man. All right, Zach wants to get back in here. Hey, Zach. I'm going to have to unmute your mic. There we go. Don't hear you, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But anybody else wants to get in here? Come on right ahead. I'll stay on for a few more minutes. Get this thing going day before Florida Vanderbilt. If you missed it yesterday, big announcement with the Gator Collective. I'm going to be ambassador for those guys. So, there we go. Make your donations there for current Gator student athletes, future Gator student athletes. You can go on the Twitter timeline there. There's some links there for you to click there. But, going to do got some big things coming up with those guys to get. I know there's a lot of questions out there about the Gator Collective and what it stands for, where the funds go, how it all works. We've got something in the works in the next couple of weeks to maybe clear the air a little bit of all the questions that are still out there about the Gator Collective, how it works, who's behind it, and all that good stuff. So be on the lookout for that there. But, of course, I know a lot of you have already signed up there to support the current student athletes, for future student athletes for the Gators. But look, you go sign up, you get all kind of exclusive interviews, exclusive content there from those guys. I hope to get more involved on that side of it as well. But right now, it's the best way with name, image, and likeness out there. If you want the best for Florida, that's the best way to do it for the student athletes currently there. So let's get that thing going. Let's get that thing ramped up, make it an example for future Gators. We'll all get together. We'll all be Gators together and getting the best name, image, and likeness deal out there as far as fan-led. So let's get that thing going. But like I said, in a couple of weeks, we'll have something to maybe clear the air, get all your questions answered. I know there's still a lot of questions about it out there, and that's one reason I wanted to get more involved. I had to get through a lot of clearance with the TV station. That's why it kind of took so long. there with the Gator Collective. But we're all good, ready to go, and we'll get the best message out there we possibly can for current and future Gator student athletes. But big announcement. Be very, very, very proud to be in partnership with the Gator Collective and getting the best out there for Gator fans. All right. Anybody else wants to get in here and extend the conversation just a little bit? If not, here we go. Nope. Get Dimitri in here. Dimitri, man, I think there you go.
Good morning.
Hey, man, how are you?
Oh man, still hurt, man. Still hurt. But I'm trying to limp through the week, man.
Yeah.
But man, you know, I know everybody expecting us to go out and just, you know, dog walk Vanderbilt, man. But I just really wanna see how he keeps the rest of the team for the rest of the year. You know what I'm saying? How to keep, you know, progressing guys and getting guys in there that, you know, giving guys chances like Fraser, you know, that was nice. Sin.
Yeah.
Touchdown, you know. And, you know, I just want to just hopefully that he can start getting these younger guys on his defense in, man. Like, hey, giving them a chance. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. I know, like I said, I know we all wanted to see more Hopper. He got some play, you know, more playing time versus Kentucky last week. And I mentioned this week, too, you know, to get him on the field more. In run-friendly scenarios, look, I know college football now is a lot of four or five receivers, spread teams out. Maybe still some opportunities to put some three linebackers on the field, so I wouldn't mind seeing Moon, Hopper, Diabate all out there together if the situation calls for it, whether that be a 4-3, whether it be 3-3-5. You know, we'll see in different ways. I think Florida can get a third linebacker on the field. I know that's not Todd Grantham's MO, but look, we've said plenty of times Dan Mullen adjusts with the best of his talent a lot of the times. You know, let's see Todd Grantham be able to do it at times as well. So I think if you want to look for some adjustments in this defense, that's one place you can look. We'll see. I know a lot of people want to point at Derek Lingo as well. Yeah, this is a game I think Vanderbilt, you see get a lot of playing time.
Not to cut you off. Yeah, the one black. Man, I really want to see this kid out there, man. Like, from watching his Junco film and, you know, just following him, you know, because, you know, he's a special kid, man. He stuck with us, man, and he was dedicated to us, man. Like, I really would love to see him, like, because he's a great tackler, man. Like, you can see that on special teams.
Yeah, you know, and we'll see. Hopefully the staff doesn't penalize him too much for that penalty last week. So, You know how this staff goes as far as that regard. Sometimes, you know, last year we called for more accountability after a shoe toss and things like that. But hopefully for certain players, you know, that are trying to make their way into the starting roles or trying to get more playing time, they don't get penalized too much for penalties like that from week to week. So, yeah, DeJuan Black's another one. I think, you know, these safeties too, you know, we want to see some more reps there for Torrance and McDaniel, those guys at safety. Like what Torrance brings to the table most of the time there as far as not the big play happen behind him. But a lot of these guys can get better at breaking down the play in front of them, helping make tackles there. You know, the screenplay last week, for example, versus Kentucky, Trey Dean's in position to make the tackle, but you know, just doesn't do it. So you know, the little things that you can work on versus Vanderbilt, and a lot of it getting some younger players out there as well.
Yeah, go Gators, man! Thank you for your service.
Go Gators! Thanks, man. That's another thing too. Young players on the offensive side of the ball. Do we finally get to see DeMarcus Bowman, Lorenzo Lingard get carries in an SEC game? We haven't seen that since the Alabama games kicked off SEC play. We'll see if we see those guys a bit more. I would expect to, of course, but mostly just because it's going to look like the first couple games where you start getting your guys in the rotation.
Hey, one more thing, man. What is our chances of getting Stewart, man, the receiver, man?
I still say pretty good. I know there's a lot of Texas flirting that's out there right now. Hopefully the Evers come up big in that regard. I know they've been to Gainesville as well, Evan Stewart and his family. I think his dad They loved Gainesville, spoke very highly of it. That's just one Florida's going to have to, and I'm not breaking any news here or anything, and I'm stating the obvious, but going to have to just stay on top of him, to show him that Gator love and to make sure there that, you do everything you possibly can to make sure he ends up in Gainesville. So I still say favorable for the Gators right now. If he was to pick right now, I think Florida would be the pick. But we've seen in the past where you start, you're in really, really good shape. A guy would pick Florida on a certain day, and then it fades away the closer you get to signing day. Florida's that's just one you want to keep an eye on to make sure Florida just stays on top of him and can sell the future. The biggest future for him is working with a quarterback that he knows so well. And pointing to the receivers you see in the NFL right now from Florida. Those are the two things you can point to, and hopefully Dan Mullen and company keep it on him. All right, Ali, or I think you're in here.
Hey.
Hey, man.
Hey, can you hear me?
I got you loud and clear.
Oh, nice. Good morning, everyone on the panel. Definitely appreciate you doing this. I just happened to think of some days, excuse me. I think that one of the biggest issues, we're playing up and down, Jekyll and Hyde. It kind of comes from last year. I'm not bringing up the COVID, but not the players getting the time to actually play. A lot of the young guys, this is the time that they're actually, when they're getting on the field, they're actually just playing now. So they're having hiccups. Things are kind of up and down. And as you said, with the quarterback situation, I think both of the guys really aren't ready 100%. I know we say that Emory, he's been at the program. It's all about playing and getting reps. If you're not getting enough reps, this includes Anthony. If we're just not getting enough reps for the guys, I don't know how much better a guy can get if you're not getting those constant reps. If we're going to go from Emory, then we just leave Emory go and we go to Anthony. But we need to do one thing and just stick to it. I think everyone's getting a little frustrated. I get that that we lost to Kentucky, but I kind of see it as some of the just biggest mistakes that we're making is just from guys learning on the job. I really just see that, and I don't see how some of the fan base can't see that. I understand that, that we have this standard, we have this, and we do have that, yes, but at the same time, as we do as people, we have to learn on the job and learn how things go. The guys at safety, with Torrance and some of the guys even at the nickel and star position, it's just very tough to play when you're not used to getting those reps. I know I'm kind of rambling on and on about that, but I really, really think that truly is the issue. And it started last year with the COVID, with not enough of the young guys getting enough time to get some reps. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I think that holds some truth. I do know a lot of people who were, they want to get up in the games you're able to get up in, and then you bring in your second, third string guys later in games to get them a whole lot of reps there. I also think that comes up, and I hate to keep harping on it. I haven't harped on it a whole lot, but I think recruiting goes into that too. I mean, how iron sharpens iron, and sometimes that can happen in practice, and that can happen in practice too. So if you're practicing against other four-star, other five-star players, that's what's going to make you better in practice reps as well, and the guys want competition. You guys and sit there if you're in practice and you have highly rated four-star, highly rated five-star in practice that has to develop as well, you're developing against each other. And a lot of those guys, if you keep that level up, those guys are highly rated recruits getting developed at the same time instead of being forced out there. Look, Dan Mullen doesn't force guys out there anyway, but before they're ready, as I said, true freshmen don't really come in a whole lot and make an impact so far for Dan Mullen at Florida. But I think in practice, the reps there are so important too. And you'd rather be practicing against better competition in practice as well, however often that happens. But going to your scenario just a bit more, absolutely. You want to see him in games a bit. Like I said, I am kind of surprised. You can't argue with too much with how the run game has worked this year, but I am surprised a bit that you haven't seen Bowman or Lingard in some sort of package or a couple plays here or there. But it goes – you talk about playing up and down the competition, and that, especially last year in 2020, didn't allow Florida to, I guess, feel comfortable enough to go get into situations of putting Emory Jones in a fourth quarter, letting him have it to himself. Some of the backup offensive linemen as well. And we're starting to see that come around a bit more, but mostly because of necessity and guys getting hurt up front and needing guys to fill in. But we saw it the first couple games of the season. You did see it. They rotated a lot of, especially on defense, rotated a lot of guys on defense, and that's contributed to giving some of the yards away, some of the points away. And hopefully that comes around. Hopefully you start seeing that pay its dividends now that we're close to halfway in the season. There's enough tape out there, enough film out there that, you know, those guys are now going to go play with the ones a little bit when somebody goes out, somebody goes down. You can go fill in for those guys and have some comfortability back there. Some younger guys being able to take the playing time they got from the first couple games this season, hopefully tomorrow versus Vanderbilt as well. And if you need those guys versus LSU, Georgia, South Carolina, Missouri, FSU, that there's enough tape out there now that you can go count on it. And you're right, you didn't get that last year. You did not get that a whole lot. With this Gator team. And look, kind of going back to the previous point too, where did the Frazier stuff come from last week? You know, we haven't seen Frazier's – we've seen barely on the field at all this year. They identified something to have him out there early versus Kentucky last week. So, you know, there's a good job of getting a younger player out there, getting his feet wet, letting him make a play. Because that screen pass, that screen play touchdown to him, right. that was mostly all him. That was him making a play out there. So – There's guys out there proving themselves when the spotlight's on them as well.
Absolutely. And just one more quick point that kind of goes to that. I almost hate to say this too. We kind of almost expect Dan to be who he's not. And I really truly think one of Dan's biggest things that he has is almost a downfall too. He's a great teacher. Yep. He likes to teach. He likes to scheme. He likes to do this and that. And when a player passes his test, that's when he's ready to go and go. And until that point, it's like, okay, yeah, he's great now to B level. He's great now to C level. He's great now to B to C to D level. He's not at a B or A level. I don't trust him enough to put him on the field. That's where I think we have one of our biggest issues. It's not a thing that players can't play, but if Dan doesn't trust him to go run the right route or as far as mm-hmm. with AR or any of the or Bowman or the Lingard and all these things like that, if he doesn't trust it as much as we want as fans, I get where everybody's frustration comes in that. If we were at work and we didn't trust something, we may not do it as well. So that kind of is the come and go, and I get the point that it's kind of frustrating for everybody, but when your coach is a teacher, he's going to stick to that. That's just part of his program, and we kind of either learn to live with that, or I hate to say we're going to adapt to just wait till it runs its course. That's kind of just how it kind of goes. I don't want to waste everybody else's time, and I do wish everybody else a great morning, and I'll let somebody else get on, and if you could answer part of the question as well, Dave. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, that's part of that is the way Dan Bowen coaches, and it is, as I even said in those games where you know you're better than the opponent. Dan Mullen likes to tinker. Whether you believe him or not, you know, he did say last week, and this was going into Kentucky game, but on his radio show, and this is the example that you're kind of bringing up there. He goes, versus South Florida, look, I put Emory Jones in situations. I want to see how he responded. I wanted to see how he responded to this certain coverage. I want to see how he responded to this certain scenario, a certain situation. And that you're right. That is how he is, and that extends to the practice field. That extends to playing time. That extends kind of go into a lot of the Emory Anthony Richardson talk that we've had so far this morning, and the running backs, the Lingard and Bowman. If you're not ready, and it is a strength of Dan Mullen. That's one reason he's known as a good developer. But it could be considered a downfall as well that he's not going to put guys out there before they're ready. And you know, I don't know if that's something he changes. I don't know if that's something he adapts to. I don't know if he even should adapt to it. If he doesn't trust a guy to be out there, do you want Dan Mullen to put him out there? I guess that's the question. I guess your question is, do you trust Dan Mullen in that situation? That is the question, and only. Sure. Everybody's going to have their own answer for that one.
Right.
To kind of piggyback off that, I think Dan Mullen actually got his degree in education.
So there we go. But yeah, it is. You got to take the good with the bad, I guess. And however people would define good and bad in that situation. Stink, what's up, man?
Oh, hey, man, what's going on, D? Man, y'all got me at work listening, y'all. I got a question for you.
What's up, man?
How you go develop transfer, one-year transfer? Because mostly his best players have been transferred coming in. So this is why I always talk about recruiting. They need to recruit better and get 3 to 4 year players. But you bring these players in for 1 year and starting them, then they leave. Then you bring in more transfer for a year, starting, they leave. Man, that's 9, 8, 9, 10 wins every year. There's no playoff championship team coming from that. So I said from day one, MSU, Mississippi State in the East, and that's where it go be until they start recruiting.
Hey, you preaching to the choir a little bit, man. You know, we've been on that train a bit together. Look, I got the transfer portal stuff to begin with. Like 2018, 2019, you're trying to build your program. You need to fill some holes. It was the complete right move. I just don't think it needs to be the it needs to be the fallback. It doesn't need to be famous. And right now, we know recruiting needs to get better. We're beating a dead horse there. But as far as your, as far as your situation and talking about the process, you're right. I don't think you can, or at least it's not sustainable. At least it's not consistent on a championship level of the transfer portal. Does it change the game? Absolutely. Is everybody doing it? Yes, but to the degree Florida's doing it, not necessarily sure that's sustainable for a championship on a consistent level. Looking at me, Florida needed the transfers on the defensive line. But as you said, you've recruited guys up front, the Jalen Leeds of the world that haven't really contributed yet. So hopefully they're getting developed, because Valentino, Newkirk, Truesdale, those guys are going. Those guys are going after this year. And you hope at least by bringing those transfers in this year, those guys are getting developed underneath them and they can step in and play right away next year.
But the thing is with that, DW, by the time they get developed, they got 1 year left.
They got 1 year. You're right.
That's why you got to recruit better.
If they're developed at the level you want them to be developed at, then in a way you hope it's only 1 year and they're playing at that level to go. But you're right. You're only getting the 1 year out of them. Now, I'm not expecting that, for those that especially those defensive line guys. There's a lot to see behind Dexter, Truesdale, Newkirk, and Valentino before we can even put that label on anybody. But I definitely get where you're coming from there.
All right, man. Let me get back to work.
All right, man. Thanks, Nick. All right, last one in here, get a quiz. What's up, Gator Quiz? I don't think your mic is working there.
Can you hear me? Dave, can you hear me? Yeah. How you doing, Dave? Listen, I agree with 100% with you. Like I've always said, you and Will always talk about recruiting and stuff. At the end of the day, great questions you gave at the Kentucky press conference. But it's frustrating because he talks about thumb wrestling. He talks about all this competitive stuff. But yet we're losing in recruiting, to Georgia, Alabama, LSU. So where is that competitive fire when it comes to recruiting? You know what I mean? It's like I always mention to people when I post on Twitter and other things, it's easier to develop a 4 and 5 star than it is a 2 or 3.
that's what I've always fell back on as well in that regard. Look, is developing important? Absolutely. It's the most important aspect of coaching out there besides, your game day acumen. And Dan Mullen's, for the most part, pretty good there. But, why make it harder on yourself? That's probably the best way to put it. Why I have to go develop the 3 star to turn in? Why I have to take the time it takes to develop, especially along the offensive line? Very rarely is there an impact guy along the offensive line for starter that comes in right away. And look, don't get me wrong, I know it's hard. You don't expect a whole lot of offensive linemen to come in here and contribute right away. That mostly is a developmental position. but it can happen. We've seen it happen. We've seen it happen at Georgia. We've seen it happen in Alabama. And I know a lot of people get tired of the comparison of Alabama and Georgia and their recruiting level, but that's your competition. But you got to face the reality. It is what it is. And I'm not asking you to recruit on Alabama level. That's pretty. That's pretty much not going to happen. But you know, you've got to find a way to still the instant impact players. But the thing is, do I trust Dan Mullen to play the instant impact player? I think that's another part of it too. Yeah, you can get the 5-star. Yeah, you can get the highly rated 4-star. But are they gonna play right away? Are they gonna contribute right away? You know, would Evan Neal have come in at Florida and played right away? He probably should have. But would we have trusted John Hennessy to throw him out there? Would we have trusted Dan Mullen to put him out there? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Consistency says no. What has actually happened says no, but those are different type of players, difference maker type of players that I'm not sure we have on this roster for the most part. So maybe you get that type of recruit, and that's when we start seeing these early impact guys.
But that's a great point, Dave, like you say about offensive line. Look, in my opinion, I've told people, listen, I would love like a Phil Troutline, a Gator legend, Gator national championship, and he's doing great things in Penn State. He's a recruiter plus a developer. Why? Hevesy has clearly said that he's not going to put a freshman out there, even if he's a great player. So what are we going to do next year? Look, a lot of these guys are gone. Garage is gone. White's going to step up, Braun and stuff like that. But DeLance is gone, and so is Reese. So who the hell do we have after that? That's the question.
Right. That is. You know, we wondered about depth, and you've seen it at times this year when Florida has needed it. You've seen Braun come in. You've seen Tarkin come in. But, you know, it's okay. Now who's going to be behind those guys next year? And
exactly.
So that's, you know, it's definitely worth bringing up. You know, when we talk about recruiting, it's pretty much beating a dead horse for you know, the people who listen to Gators Breakdown and stuff probably know, you know, that's calmed down a little bit. It is what it is. We can't change it. There's no use in beating a dead horse. Do we know it has to be better? Absolutely. And during the season, I slow it down anyway, of course. Yeah, I'm worried about the 12 games in the regular season Florida plays there. But, of course, you know, you had Jamari Lyons commit this week for the Gators. We'll see what tight end Skinner does today. Worth keeping an eye on, I think. Alabama probably.
Well, considering Hawkins decommitted from us, who knows if Skinner takes a look at us.
You hope that's a good sign. I mean, look, that I'm sure the decision's already made. You know, whatever Hawkins did probably is not going to play into his decision either way. What you hope was it's the other way around. He maybe found out Skinner's coming along and, okay, I'll go to Stanford. But, you know, if it was anybody but Stanford, I might feel better about that scenario. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. I just told it's worth keeping an eye on today. We'll see. I, like I said, my prediction would be Alabama. We'll see where it goes from there. But, you know, just worth keeping an eye on.
Thank you, Dave, for all that you do. I love Gators Breakdown, and you and Will continue the great work. Awesome.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. All right, guys, that will do it here for this Spaces edition Friday before Florida Vanderbilt. Everybody, thanks for joining in. Thanks for talking. Thanks for listening. If you're a Gators Breakdown Plus member, we'll have the Florida Vandy post game right there from the press box, right before I leave the stadium. We'll do the Discord post game show on Gators Breakdown Plus, of course, review show on Sunday as well. And Will and I get back together on Monday. Will, you need something to eat? Like I said, not really go throw ads on your face on these spaces, but try to help you out too. $5 off, $25 or more at Four Rivers. So if you're going to Gainesville, if you're in Jacksonville, Orlando, Tampa, Tallahassee areas, try to help you out here. You get some discount on some barbecue, $5 off, $25 at Four Rivers Smokehouse. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to this Spaces edition of Gators Breakdown. Catch you guys later.